Last time on Desperate Attune, Bidrahi confronted Mylora Clev in a deadly duel, while the others ensured the rules of engagement were followed. To set things up, Clem and Mushfik made a deal with the Boneshakers. Mylora had originally hired them to back her up during the fight, but Mushfik convinced them that it was in their best interest to act as neutral bookmakers instead. He assured them that while most people would expect Bidrahi to lose, the crew were well prepared to cause an upset. The Boneshakers and Rising Moon could both benefit by setting the right odds and with a well-placed bet. On the day off, the factions met under the dirty light of dying lanterns in the aptly named Murder Alley. Bidrahi laid out his charges against Mylora, but the Falling Star showed no remorse, stealing Bidrahi's resolve. He wrapped his eyes with a blindfold red with his own blood, whispered a prayer to a forgotten god, she who slays in the dark, and stepped deeper into the shade. Mylora answered with a hidden throwing knife, striking Bidrahi in the chest. On another day, that might have been the end of it, but empowered by a divine killer, Bidrahi shrugged off the pain and continued forward. He mocked her for resorting to petty trickery. Was she not a swordmaster? Mylora took the bait, and the two charged at each other, steel met steel in the dark. Shortly before the duel, figuring that Mylora wouldn't play fair, Clem had been sweeping the nearby rooftops. Unsurprisingly, they found one of Mylora's men, a leech, planting traps, as another tried to ambush them. The latter wouldn't live long enough to regret this, as Clem promptly buried a pickaxe into his eye socket. The leech, who had fled, had now returned to avenge his dead friend, tossing a grenade at Clem, who in turn tossed it down into the alley, hoping to trip Mylora up. Upon sighting the explosive, Mylora ran for cover deeper into the alley, and Bidrahi followed in pursuit. Mushfik was in the crowd, where he'd spotted Peregrine, the falconer captain. Figuring that bombs falling from the rooftops would go over poorly with the cops, he and the Rising Moon cohorts improvised a chant, implying that chucking grenades into crowded alleys was a regular Falling Star tactic. Soon the whole crowd was into it, which was enough to convince Peregrine that the Rising Moon were victims of excessive Falling Star aggression. Deep in the alley, the grenade went off like a flash of thunder and lightning. As a white light cut through the blackness, Mylora turned to face her opponent, and saw Bidrahi bearing down on her, like an angry god.
Uduasha City, where the sun is a mirror and the moon a shadow, where dancers cavort in forbidden operas, making love to forgetting and flame. Where the wealthy play at war with silver swords and silken sashes, where the people mine the dead heart of a burning star for cannonballs and pipework, and where a thousand secrets hide in a forest of paper and ink. Here, the five keybearers reside, the five who know the secrets of the broken gates of death. Five. Five only. There is no sixth spire, forlorn and forgotten in the desert. There is no one who looks to the displaced, the poor and destitute and landless, whose ancestry has been stripped from them by foreign looms and foreign sparcraft, and no one has ever heard of the House of Endings. But this is their story. Their roots pulled up and burned, they stand in filth up to their necks, and that is precisely why they must keep their heads ever high. Welcome to Uduasha, immigrant. May it fear the name of the house you will build. Welcome to Desperate Attune, an actual play podcast about characters with their identities in peril, played by an international cast devoted to fiction-first gaming, collaborative world-building, and complex character drama. Bidrahi, what do you do?
Yeah. So I think I'm going to try to, I don't know if this is a rule, but, or if this is just what happens. Well, tell you what, I can always have the environment kind of like, well, I'm going to use even the odds to just be like, I want this to be the perfect scene for setting for the situation. I would like her to be, I would like us to be in a trapped alley. Would that make sense?
That'd be fine. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. She has nowhere to run. You have invoked a special ability called Even the Odds, which says you always have access to a convenient environmental feature. In this case, it's a dead end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this could go badly for me because now she's got nowhere to run, which means it is going to go down. Right. So I think I'm going to approach her and I'm just going to be like, let us finish the conversation we started earlier. I want to know why. Why do you care so much about our little school? Why do you care so much about some immigrants from Kethris? A place that I don't know if you even know where it is on the map, okay? Why it is that you and your father are so obsessed with us. Please, you may You may tell.
Yeah. He holds her sword aloft. He looks at you, like, mentally files away the whole grenade thing for later. Mm-hmm. And she says, look, it's not about you. It's not about your sword school. You may practice as much as you want. That's never what it was about. It's about Saida.
What about Saida? What about Auntie Saida? What about Ustad Saida, huh? And I'm stepping forward slowly. She's got her pointy sword at me, so I'm not like stepping forward carefully.
Yeah, and she says, calling her a heretic simply wouldn't do. Saida is something akin to a spiritual terrorist. You think we hadn't noticed? There was a shift in Ypres. Even the fruit noticed her workings.
Okay. The word you're looking for is idolater, okay? First of all.
Yeah.
Second of all.
She actually smiles and nods and goes, idolater will do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Second of all, maybe what you're saying is right. Auntie Saida, Ustad Saida, idolater Saida has been saying a lot of absolutely fucked up shit. Like the weirdest bullshit you could possibly imagine being on, okay? And I'm scared as all hell. All right. However, she is my Ustad. She has taught me much, and she is part of my family. And if anyone's going to stop her from being on her bullshit, it's going to be me. And it's going to be Shere Khatam. It's going to be Sister Moss, and also Sibling Clem, who is now part of the family honorably. But anyway, why am I telling you about these people? You're going to die anyway. Listen, your mistake was trying to solve a problem in a way where you did not let us, you should have let us decide these matters ourselves. You should have come and you should have spoken. You could have tried anything except trying to kill Saida and kidnapping my girlfriend. What is this nonsense? What is all this? And I'm like stepping right forward. And I think like I touch blades with her at this point, mm-hmm. like just the tips.
Yeah, and she says, I'm genuinely sorry about the girl. She was just in the way.
Mm.
But notably, genuinely not sorry about Saida. She is very much like, yup. And I think you see this steely determination in her eyes now, where she actually considers like Saida a threat to the state.
Mm. I think I was going to say I look her in the eye, but I don't do that because I can't. Mm. So I just kind of like stand there for a bit and I say, mm-hmm. okay, I accept your apology and I accept you as who you are. But you understand that she is my Ustad and I must defend her with my life. And thus, should I call you Ustad? Were you an Ustad in Duskfall? I don't know.
In Duskfall, I was.
For now, I will face you as an Ustad then. Ustad, my Lera, it is time. I am in your way. Fight your way out if you want. So I think this is the moment.
She will like try to raise her sword and try to cut you down.
I'm going to fuck with her first. Let's see. So I have just one load left for this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to mark a lantern, open it up real quick, blind her, and then close it again.
Okay, excellent. This is an action. It's finesse, probably. It is, I think in this situation, it's desperate and it's standard.
Mm-hmm.
But what is going to happen here is that there are two effects of this standard. One, it will allow you to defeat her, and it will allow you to defeat her without actually killing her, because, you know, you're just blinding her.
No, I will kill her, though, is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I know, but I'm giving you the option going this route.
Okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Desperate standard.
Mm-hmm.
What possible devil's bargain could there be?
That is a good question, actually.
If not, we can just push. But do you have one?
Uh-huh. I think I do, actually. You were still being like interacting with a screwed up forgotten god, and I want to lean into that because this is about religion for Mylera too.
Yeah.
And so I think the obvious devil's bargain, as you
as you open this lantern, is like succeed or fail, you realize that to some extent Mylera is correct and that Saida is incredibly dangerous. That doesn't mean she's evil, right? But you will have the shaking realization that Saida's bullshit is like forgotten god level dangerous. I think you already sort of believed, but it will be a deep-seated fear now, and we will in fact mark it as a harm if you take this devil's bargain. I will call it a level 2 harm called fearing the end.
No, I'm not going to take that because I think I'm playing into that anyway. May I propose one for myself?
Yeah, sure.
If I let light into this and I use light, then I lose the blessings of she who slays in the dark.
Yeah, but I think you're about to end the fight anyway, so
that's true.
Really
yeah,
matter.
If I succeed. Yeah, but if I don't succeed. Okay, yeah, then I'll just push myself.
I don't think we have a devil's bargain here, then.
Okay.
I mean, if you're she likes the dark, right, and you're bloodthirsty, you have to make this as bloodthirsty as possible. Like, you're not just going to cleanly kill her in plain view, right?
I don't think that makes sense for this deity either, because it's not like a deity of berserk rage, like I said. It's a deity of, like, stabbing people in the back. So it's not like... It's not a particularly brutal god in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think this was a good conversation where we bounced ideas around, and I think we established some character ideas as well through it. But in the end, I'm just going to go for the push.
Yep.
Let's do it. Please. Oh, this is 6.
It's a 6.
Mm-hmm.
So this works.
Should I tell you what it looks like?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So she rushes forward with, she's got the reach advantage over me, and she's trying to try to use that. And she's like probably, I mean, I think there's a little bit of like, she's getting her night vision on, and like, you know,
yeah,
she's a person who lives in the Shattered Isles. She's from Duskfall and all that. So she's probably got good night eyes. She's getting used to it, and she's got her eyes on my buckler because she's not going to fall for that again. I should die, honestly. She's much better than me. But then I just casually, I don't know, it's like I had a lantern strapped to my waist, and she probably forgot about that because I haven't been using it.
Yeah.
Just open it real quick and then just drop it, and she just immediately is blinded and she misses her thrust.
Yeah.
And I just step in, and I think I just slice her throat open.
Yeah. So there is a sudden instant cut. She falls to the ground, grasping at her throat. She looks up at you, and I think she has time for a last word. And she looks you in the eye and she says, "Prince of," and doesn't manage to finish it.
Okay. Then I think I'm going to say, I could tell you, we could either cut or I could just tell you what I do before I leave this alley.
Go ahead, finish this.
Yeah. So, the reason they're called the Red Sashes is that in the Colosseum, when they spill blood, they have their red sash, but they also have like a white sash. The red sash they use while they fight, it's like their symbol. But when they spill blood and they, I don't know, duel to the death and so on, they wipe the white sash on their opponent's blood.
Yeah.
And I have such a white sash with me. So I just dab it on her throat, put it on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Take off the blindfold that I'm wearing because, well, what's done is done.
Yeah.
And I step out.
Yep. So you have indeed successfully slain her in the dark because no one saw this. They were a little bit distracted by the grenade and everything. That said, it's still obvious who won the duel because one of you is dead.
So. Yeah. Also, something that I was thinking is that the bees and the Rakshasas are connected servants or whatever to she who slays in the dark.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I have her blessings. Does this do anything for what happens with the body and the bees?
Yes, I think so. I think so. I mentioned that the crawling things are on your side. So, in fact, I think what happens is that the bees would normally arrive. What instead happens is something very weird as Bidri emerges. You are going to see the worship of the cockroaches. They like gather up as the lamplight spreads. Like, normally cockroaches scatter, and there are a lot of them down here. Instead, what you see is they like in a circle around you, raising their antenna as if in worship.
Of me or the body?
Of both, of the situation,
I see. Seems. I give like a shudder. I can't help it otherwise. And I think like now that the situation's ended, like I just like kind of slump forward and just hand on the walls. I just kind of like walk out, and I don't want to be part of this anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we will see if the bees turn up or if some other like weird insect related rituals happen in this alleyway. It will be unknown, I think. Mm-hmm. But you have seen a sliver of She Who Slays in the Dark and her servants.
Don't like it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's fine. You're like, you, gross. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And let us cut back to Moss, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Who
All right.
is holding this man in the stairs, like not really trapping him. Like he can leave if he wants to, but he is interested enough to share a couple of words with you. But I think you have the initiative, so what do you say?
I think in fact he's pushed past me, right? And then I said something, and so he has his back to the exit. So two things I want to do. One is I want to get Clem's attention, and I want Clem to know what I'm planning, because I think Clem knows that he's here and that I'm here.
Yeah, right? I think you can signal this to Clem easily enough. All it really takes is like a light source of some kind, right? So if you like have it's a lantern, you're visible. So
it's a sound, in fact. I think Moss is banking on the fact that Clem, like when she first saw Clem, she assumed that Clem had been in the Deathlands, and there is this way of communicating over very long distances when you're traveling through that kind of like rocky desert sections, where you beat your staff against stone to create these like cracks of sound, and it's kind of a Morse code. And she's signaling to Clem that basically this guy cannot be allowed to leave, but it's not time for violence yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. So it's some sort of signal that means like don't like keep your eye on this thing, but don't kill it effectively.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think is a like, common enough thing in the Deathland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she'll say, I've given you my name.
Right. Right, of course, he says. And I think he'll say, they call me the Hourglass. Because, you know, the faction he's part of, they all use aliases.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not telling you this to be like evasive. This is actually like the name by which he can be reached. You know, you call for the Hourglass. That's how he's known in the underworld.
If I'm going to solve this, if I'm going to gain any influence over this ghost, if we're going to work together on this, I need to understand what happened to them, who they were. Who died in that place? You were somehow involved. I cannot imagine otherwise.
Yeah, certainly. And yeah, he nods. And while you're asking this, what is Clem doing? Because I think this is still a very tense situation, and Clem has received this message.
Yeah, I think Clem is going to be,
You are under no obligation to remain in the lamplight, seeing as the duelists have left. No.
The duelists have left, and I think Clem is going to make their way towards, through the crowd, towards, because I imagine he's got his back to where Clem was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so she can leave and come up behind him. So he would be sandwiched between her and Moss.
Yeah, we don't need to roll anything yet, but good to know that you're like subtly moving up behind him. He is sort of feeling the pressure. And he looks at Moss And he says they were, most of them, Kethrisi, but not from any of the villages you've heard of, probably. And then he like tilts his head and realizes that Moss has probably heard of every village because you just have this worldly look to you. And I guess I need a name for a village now that's like a cool village that will contrast Ankatam, that has like a different vibe to it. Because you guys come from Katam village, but I think these are from a different village. That makes the most sense to me.
What sort of aesthetic are you thinking?
I think hope. I think hope is the vibe of this village. Actually.
What's the Bengali for hope? Aside from Asha, which will not work because we are already in Udu Asha.
Oh, yeah. Hope. That's
interesting that hope is in the name, but...
No, I mean, Asha is the...
Yeah, okay.
The common one.
So we can't go with that. Some other positive... some other, like, future-leaning name.
Something like Salvation or something.
Salvation, yeah, Salvation's a great name. Or something like that. Being saved?
Yeah.
Maybe not in the religious sense, but just in the, like, saved from danger?
Udhar.
Yeah, Udhar.
Udhar? Yeah, okay, cool.
Rokka.
So,
Rokka, yes, Rokka, that's better. Rokka.
Rokka, okay, yeah. Cool. So, yeah, he inclines his head and he says, Rokka, have you heard of it? And... I think Moss would have. So the vibe of this village that I'm going from is, as you can tell, they are like a place in Kethrisi which was like quite religious, quite forward-looking. And while, of course, they have been subject to the same kind of like conversion as everyone else, they remain quite fervently hopeful. And in fact, very few of them actually left their village. Like very few of them emigrated elsewhere. And they are seen as stubborn and, yeah, like... willing to hang on. So it's unusual, you would think, to have people from that village in Udu Asha. But of course, some people leave. It is how it be.
Yeah, she narrows her eyes, thinking for a moment. Nice people. Bit to themselves. From Rokka, you say? Did you know them well enough that you know if anybody is still around who might be close to them?
Yes. Though they are difficult to find, your best bet is probably, and he like weighs his words because he also wants to get out of this situation now. And then he will say, your best bet is probably the people smuggler, Gurban the Camel. He got a friend of theirs into the city recently. He should know where they are.
Gurban!
Yeah, I'm tying it together. Yeah. Gurban is, for the people who missed it, the person that Mushfik is looking for because he smuggled Mushfik's old Ustad into Udu Asha. So,
and is also going to be involved in that Ustad's death, apparently.
Yes.
Gurban!
I feel like it's a good way to tie it together. So Gurban is also the lead to the small community of the people from Rokka.
Okay. I'll have a look. Oh. Gosh, I can't... I feel like I heard that name before. But... Was there anything else?
I know about them. I could consult my notes. I know where to find you. I could get back to you about it, he says. And he is, like, telling the truth, but also I'm going to do some research on my own. I don't know if you're comfortable letting him do that. But he's taking this as his opportunity to leave, you know, like, let me check my notes. Let me bring them back to you. We can talk later.
You understand. Yeah. You understand, though, that we can't let anyone know about the tree. Certainly not. Outsiders.
He scoffs and he says, "We are not outsiders." And now I think it becomes plain to you. He says this in Udvash, and you know, if this, you know, maybe I should cast him in like extremely posh English, right? Like, we are not outsiders, in the sense that he goes like, "You're countryside bums. We're the city. We're, you know, we're not outsiders. We're your natural lords and masters." This is, but yeah.
This tree is in Udvasha?
Yeah. Yeah. It's ours.
Yeah. It's... Fuck off. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is the vibe he gives off. He's like honestly surprised, I think, that you call him even an outsider. That, mm-hmm. Like, the Khetrisi should look up to us. What the hell? You should be happy to be allowed to be in our fine city. And then he's going to try.
Hospitality ghetto? Hospitality?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, he's going to try to leave now. You can stop him if you want, but he has had enough of this conversation, and also he has a Clem to kill.
All right.
You know, he's a busy man.
I'm going to look somewhat like stunned by his words, and I'm going to let him turn around and then shoot him in the back.
Okay, so fair enough. So he turns around and you're going to try to shoot him. Yeah, go ahead and roll. I think given that Clem is behind him, this is not necessarily Clem assisting, but I think you have scale on him, basically, so it's going to be risky standard, even though it might probably be desperate and whatnot, but he is a little caught off guard, and also you have him surrounded.
It's colonialism all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is the complexity of the situation, right? It's not...
Yeah. Fuck this guy.
It's not Iruvians versus Udvashans. There's lots of complicated things to this.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah, we just can't let him get away with the... We can't let him get away to, like, tell people and mess with the tree. Because
which he 100% would.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
The
tree is the tree is fragile as it is. So it's going to be, like, normally shooting someone would be hunt. I think now it's finesse because I'm misdirecting. It doesn't matter dice-wise. It's two dice.
Absolutely. I have a devil's bargain to you, but it's really dumb. But I'm going to propose it anyway.
Okay.
He has this, like, bandolier bag full of dangerous shit, and he's in a stair. So, succeed or fail, he's going to drop his bag, and it's going to roll down towards Clem. And this will have consequences. Assuming you're okay with it, Clem.
Yeah, this is great. This is fine. I've got things.
That'll just make them feel more.
I was never there.
If you feel good about it, then I'm happy to.
I love it.
Yeah. Again, it's succeed or fail, because if you miss him, I think he'll just leave the bag and, like, jump over the railing or something.
But... Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A 2, a 5, and a 5.
Perfect.
Okay. So, first of all, he drops the bag, you shoot him in the back, you hit him and kill him. I think it's like, you shoot him in the back. There's not much to be done about that, and he will fall down towards Clem, and let me just roll the devil's bargain and the consequence into one here in this case. Like, if you'd rolled a 6, you would have had time to deal with the bag, but now I just think it makes sense that it's a consequence. So, like, it rolls down, and his bottle of fire oil shatters, and almost this entire district is made of wood. So the reason this is not desperate is it's not an immediate life-threatening thing to you, but Clem, there is now a fire breaking out at your feet.
Cool.
This guy is, like, falling down, his bag catches on fire, and I think if you don't do something about it, you stand at risk of... Actually, no, it's already a consequence. I think you were just hit by this. You're like, shoes catch fire because there's fire oil.
If I resist, what would it look like?
Probably catching the bag to keep it from, to keep the fire oil from breaking, right?
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll try to do that.
If you resist it, the contents of the bag will still be destroyed, probably, but... Well, no, that doesn't make any sense either, because you're keeping it from shattering. Yeah, I think you can just save it by catching the bag. Either Clem or Moss could do that.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I'm good too. I've got a gas mask. That's why I was like, yeah, sure, go for it. I've got a gas mask. It makes me functionally immune here.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I think it's very spooky.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good to resist.
Okay, so Clem will scoop up the bag before the alchemicals inside it have time to break. Fair enough. Let's see this resistance roll.
Yeah, I think it makes sense with insight, because being able to react in time, or, functionally, it's all the same.
insight is logical. And it's a 6. You rolled well this score. So you scoop up the bag.
Yeah.
And I think this more or less fully resists it. The only, like... Well, there is one other consequence, which shouldn't be overlooked, and that is there was a gunshot, which is unusual in Uduasha. And I don't think... Well, we had the grenade, of course, but now there's also a gunshot, so it piles on to the situation.
Yeah.
So that also happens. But, you know... the bag is caught, and the guy is rolling down the stairs, having been murdered in Murder Alley. And a second victim has been claimed, and I think that is basically the end of the score, actually.
Probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good enough place to wrap it up. So we will obviously see your characters have a conversation about this later. But let us do the payoff here real quick, and then we can go on to resume the role-playing. Because I think, you know, people will scatter apart. There will be some confusion about what the hell happened. Then one of the Bone Shakers guys will, like, find Malera Clev and confirm who won. And that's that.
Mm-hmm. So, who won?
Malera!
Woohoo! Yeah.
It was rigged!
No, I think, you know, the Bone Shakers are happy whoever wins here. They still collect.
And this is even better because now the long shot has won, which means they get more money. I don't know how gambling works.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So you get 2 rep plus the Falling Star are tier 3, I think.
That is correct, boss.
Yeah. So you get 4 rep.
Who's marking this shot? Should I?
So yeah, please do.
Okay. Done.
Mm-hmm. 4 rep. And you also get some coin, and I said 4 coin at the beginning, and I think what makes sense here is there is, in order to be fair to Salty here, let us say that you get 5 coin, and because Clem also gets like the money you invested in back, I guess. Yes. So there's, because Clem paid a coin to get the coin here, so I think it makes sense to have a bonus coin be returned, so 5.
Awesome. Okay, 1 for the crew and 1 for everyone else.
If you want to divide it that way, that is totally up to you.
Sounds good.
And yeah, then there is also the matter of the things you collected. You have a Shadow Silk cloak, which is heavily restricted. So like you can't just sell that without like a roll, because we have established it's like illegal to sell it without a license, but you have one. So you may do with that as you will. You also have a bag of like leeches bandolier stuff. You have no way of restocking this, but you know, you have that. That's also sellable, also illegal, also has to go through a fence, but you have it. So, yeah. And then there is the matter of heat on top of that. You don't have a ward boss. You avoided that, so that's all good. And as for heat, I think
Keep your local police officer honest.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
It's very funny to me that you cannot imagine this guy as being corrupt, by the way, because I have based him in my head. He is played by the corrupt cop from Casablanca. That's like how I imagine him looking. But
yes. that guy's fun corrupt.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think that how we will frame it is this was a duel, but there was high exposure because you had an audience. So I think it makes sense to call it a base 4 heat. And then there is a bunch of extra heat. So it didn't exactly happen on hostile turf. It happened on neutral turf. But the target is high profile or well connected. You are at war. Killing was involved. So that's 8 heat already. And then there's the matter of the grenade and the gun, which is an additional 2. So it's 10 heat.
Wanted level 3.
But you do get -1 for some stuff. But...
Oh no, we get -2 because of noble privileges. Yeah. Okay, wanted level 3.
Is it wanted level 3 even with that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
I think it's high time Captain Peregrine have a chat with you.
Actually, no. It's one away.
Okay, so it's wanted level 2, 1 away from wanted level 3. Well, that gives you some time to try and reduce heat and try to control this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I suppose.
I'll roll for entanglement now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so we're rolling for entanglement with the highest heat. That's also lovely.
This is 6.
That's just a rest.
Well,
You know what?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's me then.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I think it is.
It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, prison might be the safest place for Bitterpea right now because,
Yep. We can do a time jump and so on. I've spoken about my desires for that. Anyway.
Yes. Pay them off with coin or try to evade capture, but we'll get to it. Either way, we know. And I think it makes total sense here because, like, the Fursan are after you. Bidri has killed someone, and it's like a fairly open thing. And also, Peregrine saw everything. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay, guys.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense that it is Bidri, but let us first have like a brief scene of the crew talking to each other because I think, you know, makes sense for you guys to gather up somewhere after this. Mm-hmm. Or not. Do we want to skip ahead in time?
We should have a chat.
Yeah, I think so. Good.
Shit went down.
Yeah, maybe the cops arrive while we're having the chat. I don't know. But we should definitely have that chat.
Yeah.
Where are we having this? Like immediately after?
How do you guys find me? Because I think I'm wandering around Pasarhantu in a daze with a. So I described it as like two separate pieces of cloth, but I think it makes a lot more sense and it's a lot cooler if I took the blindfold that I had stained with my own blood and I used that to wipe my other glove's blood. Mm-hmm. So it's just that on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Just wandering around, you know? It's kind of like, oh, hello. Hello, Sherikat.
I think what makes sense is that Moss, who has been keeping an eye on this and who knows the area and who probably knew the potential escape routes. I mean, Moss also has a thing to run away from because Moss just shot someone. So I think it makes sense that like Moss pulls Clem and Mushfik away towards like this is the natural escape route. And also it is probably where Bidruhi is. So
Makes sense.
Yeah. So you meet up in one of the alleys that is not Murder Alley, one of the little winding, like less known about alleys that is like very, very narrow and mostly used as a shortcut for people who want to get to this like really great Prata cellar on the other side.
Oh, hello, Sister Moss. I haven't seen you in a long time. Have you been holed up with like your girlfriend or something?
I've been holed up with the tree. It's not going so well.
Just looking at you as though like, hello.
Fingers in front of Vitru's face, like, you know, how are you looking? Any reaction at all?
Sherekatam.
Hmm. Yeah, you, you really did it, huh? Yeah, you feel it?
I could really go for a gulab jamun right now. Would you like to go for a gulab jamun, Sherekatam? Would you like to go for a gulab jamun, Sister Moss? Would you like to go for a gulab jamun, Sibling Clem?
Yes, we should. We should all have one gulab jamun, yes.
Mm-hmm. One gulab jamun each.
Each, yes, we should.
I mean, yeah, you made us a lot of money.
Yeah.
Wait, what? But I think I go up to Moss and I'm like, Sister, I haven't seen you in so long. What has been going on? How have you been? Do you like it here in Udvasha?
I'm not sure if I haven't really been thinking about that question.
Mm-hmm. You're bleeding out of your chest.
I've spent most of the time in a basement, but yes, you're right. We you have a chest wound.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, there is. Oh, wow. Cool, free knife. If we were splitting one gulab jamun, this would be, very handy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think any of you should pay any attention to the substance of what he's saying.
So, we said it was a temporary harm, but I think we should still, do something about it. All right, come on, buddy. Let's.
Mushik's the one who's pursuing therapy now, so.
Yeah. It's probably, it's probably a shallow cut underneath it. That's why it's like a temporary wound, right? It'll be one more of your cool scars, but most of it was caught by your jacket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys are free to maneuver me wherever you want. I'm just hanging out.
Well, we'll get the glove jammer, but let's get you cleaned up first. Yeah? How's that sound?
Sherekatam, I have had many strange dreams of you giving me a bath.
Can I just say that? Are we not brothers? I feel like I can say that.
You can say anything.
I mean, I didn't like these dreams.
Mm.
But I've had them.
Well, if Vidrhe wants Sherikato to give him a bath, why
no,
not?
No, that's not what I want. So yeah, I mean, he's emerged. He's killed someone for the first time, clearly. Or I don't know if that's obvious. And it's just shell-shocked and so on. I don't know. It's up to you guys.
Let's get you somewhere safe. Mushfig, were you the one who started up that chant?
Oh, yeah.
It's good. It's a good one.
Mm. Oh, I'm trying to mix in with the locals.
Hmm.
Who are all drunk football fans, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think as I'm being carried away, I think I don't know, is Mosnick right beside me?
Yeah, I'm walking, like, I think I'm very concernedly walking.
Mm-hmm. I squeeze your hand and I say, Sister Moss, I don't know if you've been keeping up with what's been going on, but like, someone totally tried to kill Saidanti.
Is that why you just hurled yourself into this?
Yeah, I mean, someone's got to do it. I mean, she's our ustad. I mean, if you were here, maybe you, I mean, I don't know. Like, you're also her disciple, your big sister, and so on. Maybe I'd have given you the honor, but like, someone had to step up, and I did it. Also, like, this person also tried to, like, kidnap my girlfriend, and that makes it very personal.
Is Saida all right?
Oh yeah,
she's safe. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Being taken care of by a person that Clem does not have any sexual tension with whatsoever.
Fuck! I should have been here. I'm so sorry.
It's all right. We took care of things, and look, this is—I mean, technically, it's for Saidanti, but like, she's passed out and so on. So I give this to you. And I take the bloody rag and I just put it on your shoulder and pat it on.
Do I understand what this is?
Probably not, right? You know the desert, but I don't think you know like the courtesies of like arena fighting. That's very much outside your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I don't think I know what this is. I learned a little bit of how the Red Sashes fight, not how they courtesy.
Yeah. And like, no one was murdered when we fought them, so.
No, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to visit Saida then?
That would be a great idea. Yes. Let's all go to, what was this? I'm so sorry. What was his name? I don't remember. Anyway, let's go to his place. It's right next to the Playful Turtle. We can go have a bath and a kebab together. And then we can just go and say hello to Saidanti, and we can give her the thing that is soaked in my blood and my Lara Cliff's blood, and everything will be chill as fuck.
Yeah, I think taking him to some kind of medic is a very good idea.
Yeah, maybe we'll go to Arid first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can have a kebab afterwards. My treat.
Mm-hmm. So out of character, physically he's perfectly fine.
Yep.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
And at some point, like when we were to answer something, Sherikatam's going to come behind Vidrhe and just unceremoniously dump a bucket of water on him. That there's your bath.
Never.
There. All better now.
I guess. Also, like, I guess you did it while I was still wearing my clothes.
Yes.
So I don't know. I started throwing them off me because they're covered in ice water. And, you know, Vidrhe looks really small and scared and vulnerable suddenly, shivering in his cold, naked self. Where the hell is this? Where did you do this to me at?
At Aaron's.
Great way to earn Aaron's respect. I approve. And then I kind of like I shake my head and I just say, fuck, 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 fuck. She's dead. I did it. I faced down an ustad, and then I kind of like rushed towards Saida, and I kind of like clasp her hand. I say, ustad, I don't know if you can hear this on some any kind of like a subconscious level. And then I kind of like lean into her ear. Ustad, I fucking killed Mylera Clef for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Saida says nothing, and there is this like disappointment. And then we see Aaron in the background, just go like, I've told him so many times, she's sedated.
Mm-hmm.
Just frustrated with it. None of you seem to understand what the word sedated means.
Mm-hmm. And
yep.
Mm-hmm. I killed my little Clev, and then he kind of like stands and looks into the distance. And now what? Sorry?
That's like proudly or like haunted? Mm.
I think it's pride, and now it's just confusion.
Is there anyone connected to her who might still come after Zaida or anyone here?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Her father's going to fuck us up. We should probably get back home to make sure nothing's happening to Mother. And oh shit, yes. fuck. Aaron, can I borrow your clothes? And then you kind of like rush into his closet and start like putting his clothes on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think Aaron looks over at Clem with a like faintly bemused look. But I think you have enough of a friendship going on that Aaron is like, well, you'll get these back for me later, right? Right? That's like the look he's...
I'll pay you back for them.
Yeah.
I don't know how many of them actually fit between.
Yeah. Mm. I think this guy, by Bidrahi's standards, has terrible taste in clothes.
Yeah, I'm going to roll R2D6 to see if I can put together something that's still stylish.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
Okay, you roll a 6, so somehow you...
Yeah, I mean, black goes with black.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and he's got plenty of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like turn to everyone and say, I don't know how quickly news will travel, but we shouldn't leave anyone alone. Someone should stay here to... Fuck. And then I think he turns to Moss, and then he kind of like grabs her by the shoulder and say, Sister, do you think we should... Is it Mother and Usra who are going to be the targets, or is it like Saida herself? Does anyone know she's here?
I think Saida is actually very well hidden here. I want to establish this. I think Aaron, for all of his... Like, we've seen that he's a pedant. But I think part of his pedantry is actually like his clinic is extremely secure. And it's also like we established it sort of under or beside the playful turtle. So I think his lair is hidden, so to speak.
Yeah. Also, guys, I cannot stress that Bidruhi is not the person you should be looking for ideas for right now.
No, absolutely. But I think it's cool if Saida is actually like hidden away from her enemies in Aaron's shop. Mm-hmm. It also is like no one would expect to look for her here. Why the hell would she be next to the playful turtle? That's like a really strange place to find her. So,
excuse me, it's a great place to be.
Yeah, I know, but it's a very, very not Saida place to be.
That's true.
It's like a club for people who enjoy a sauna and chatting about technology. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Mm. If we're fairly confident that Saida's not going to be discovered, then I think it makes sense for Bidruhi and Moss to maybe go home and look after Moonlit and Uzra, while Mushrik and maybe Clem, we can go to the lair and
batten down the hatches.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
So, yeah, you and I should go home.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sister, lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, are we okay with me continuing this straight into a scene with Moonlit?
Yes, please.
Uh-huh. So you get home and you once more realize that your mother has guests. It's the same situation as when Momtaz first appeared. Your mother is rummaging around in the kitchen and you will step in to find Captain Peregrine in your mother's kitchen, thoughtfully smoking a pipe.
Hello, Captain... Captain Ostrich, was it? Captain Pigeon?
It's Peregrine, actually.
Of course I know. I'm just joking, my friend.
I have been talking things over with the good lady of the house. My compliments to the food. It really is a delightful home you have here. Mm-hmm. And Moonlit turns around and there is like worry in her eyes, like real serious worry. And mm-hmm. she says, I think, Bidrohi, you had better listen to this nice man's proposal.
Mm-hmm. And I look to Moss as well for guidance.
I think Moss is just looking very intently. And she's like waiting for a blow, like waiting for what this guy, the blow of what this guy is going to say.
Yeah.
And she like glances at Bidrohi like, and like nods anxiously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he turns to Bidrohi and he says, how would you like to go on a little vacation? Actually, it's not really a question. He says, like scraping out his pipe, which he has just finished smoking, looks idly down at it, and he says, how would you like to come with me and spend some time in the lovely district of the Hand, where, under the safe eyes of the law, the people who are trying to kill you will not be able to kill you? I am extending you an offer to do a little light work in the mines, he says. And he is actually doing this as a favor. Like, if he arrests you, then you're a lot harder to murder. And this is how he's presenting this whole idea. We haven't established where exactly the prison thing but I think it makes perfect sense that they have prison labor in the mines.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Right, the prison is in the Falcon's Perch. They have like dungeons and stuff up there.
Yeah. But yeah. This would also, for various reasons, not be a safe place to keep you. And I mean, they probably don't have just one prison, right? So
No, the Corvée labor with mm-hmm. prisoners makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just establishing where the prison is. Anyway, now that matters. I think Bidrohi, he kind of slumps. And for the first time, he just looks like pretty defeated. And then he kind of just looks around at Moss. And then he looks at Moonlit. I don't know if Uzra's here. Probably she would not be allowed in the room for this.
No, yeah. I don't think so.
And I'll just say, but if I'm in the prison, then there's one less person to make sure that nothing will happen to my mother. And he doesn't mention Moss here because Moss can look after herself.
Yeah. And Peregrine says, yes, my boy, this is what we like to call a plea deal. Well, not actually, but if you come quietly, I will do my utmost to make sure that no one in this household is harmed. Is that agreeable? And we did establish he's on your side, so he is actually doing you a solid by arresting Bidrohi, weirdly.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, just to make sure, am I here or are we not in this room? Yeah.
No, you are here. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, is this an arrest?
Yes. Yes, it is. Believe me, it's, for you, a lot preferable to the alternative. Now, I could bring this up to the bureaucracy. You could appeal. You could take it through the entire tedious process of getting a lawyer. And by the time everything is arranged, the lad will be dead.
I understand this was a prearranged duel. There's no point.
No.
That's not illegal, right?
He
I have no idea whether that is illegal, but I think Moss thinks it's not.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he says, well, that is why you could get a lawyer. You might be able to get away with all of this in the eyes of the law. You might. It's a tricky prospect, but it will cost you a lot of money, and it will cost you a lot of time, which you do not have.
Oh, out of... But we know a lawyer, and we know a lawyer who might be able to do this for us for free.
Yes. Yeah. You could absolutely get out. Like, you can attempt to wiggle out of an arrest. That's always possible in Blades. But the way Peregrine is framing this is, right, you want to be arrested. It's much preferable to the alternative.
Yeah, I think...
That's at least how he's trying to sell it.
I will go and kidnap Hardil in an instant.
That's okay. No fear. I think Bidrahi leans forward, and there is, in fact, Gulab Jamun on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because we have guests.
Yes.
And if there's one thing Bald Murad's good for, it's getting Gulab Jamun.
Yeah, he's very good at this.
He takes a Gulab Jamun and starts like chewing it, the syrup kind of like dripping down his hand. Mm-hmm. And then he says, doesn't really matter if it was legal or not, what happened. Doesn't really matter if we can get lawyers to agree that it is legal for me, some peasant scum, to kill the daughter of Ustad Jaiklev. Because, as the captain is intimating, subtly, is whether or not the law is on my side, Ustad Jaiklev will stop at nothing to make sure that we all die.
There is politics afoot, and I have gotten involved. Look, this sword school coming after you is grossly illegal too. I'm doing what I can. And I don't see the purpose of their apparent vengefulness towards you, but I've pieced enough things together that I know they are also not telling us everything, and we are going to get to the bottom of this, I assure you. And this is a man who can actually pull some strings with the noble families. So, like, he works for them. Yeah. And notably, he does not work only for Anrakis, who is sponsoring the Falling Star. He works for the other houses, too.
Mm-hmm. So, Bidrahi kind of licks his fingers clean, also kind of like licks his forearm clean of the syrup. And then he just says, even if you, Captain Peregrine, were to be able, and like he's like really unusually lucid right now, you know, not like really just getting to the point and being serious. Even if you, Captain Peregrine, sir, were able to prove that what the Falling Star Sword School is doing is like massively illegal and completely fucked up, and they're completely in the wrong and they should not be allowed to do any of this at all, it may well be a case that also you can level the charges of murder against them, murder of my family and all the people in the sword school, right? Because there is very, very little chance that that we can solve this, and it's like starting to break up, that we can use the law to get out of this with everyone left alive. Is that not true?
Well, with everyone left alive, I am not a gambling man, but I would not bet on it. With some of you left alive, well, I'm not a gambling man, but I would bet on that. I'm not powerless, he says. And this is a very cynical, realist thing. Like, yes, they're going to come after you. Yes, they're probably going to kill some of you. And then we'll be able to get them on charges of murder and stop them.
But if I go and work in the hand, it makes it to say, as you say, it improves the odds.
Oh, it certainly improves the odds. For one, you are the person their honor demands they're getting at, and conveniently, it will not be even be you in the hand, he says. And he takes out a fake passport. Like, not like a proper fake passport, but like a prisoner transfer paper saying that you are some guy who's been transferred from Ketris. Totally unrelated.
Hmm.
I mean, again, Mushfik got this guy to like sympathize with you, and I think this is, it's a clever way to avoid further bloodshed. So you will be in prison under a different name.
Yeah, but they're still gonna come here. They're still gonna come looking here, and Mother and Usra will be here.
Yes, I'm well aware of that.
And they're going to come looking in a sword school, and Zaidia is going to be there. Everyone's going to be there.
Oh, the rest of you should, for certain, lay low. The sword school should probably not remain open for a little while I sort this. And as for the worry about them coming here, well, this wonderful lady has just arranged for me an extremely pleasant room, he says, sucking on his pipe. and I shall be staying here for at least a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. I think Bidruhi temporarily forgets the situation. Well, Ma, that is incredible news for the boarding house. If there's an actual like falconer staying here, like imagine the clientele that you can get with.
Oh, I'm sorry, relax.
I've forgotten the situation. Yes.
Officially, I am just here to carry out some investigations in Bundervest, which happens to be perfectly true.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, well, their base already is... No, wait, the Falconer's base is not in Bundervest, right? The Fursans is. So, yeah, it makes sense for him to sign into, you know, check into a hotel room in a different district so he can live where he works.
Yeah.
Perfectly normal.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to like crack this joke to kind of bring always look on the bright side of life at my mom.
Yeah,
I don't know if she's looking at the bright side of life though.
She is not, but I think so. The way that I'm coming down here with this arrest, why this is like a strong arrest that's difficult to wiggle out of, is I think she is very persuaded. Like she would rather have her son in witness protection than you know attacked by swordsmasters who are now like. Properly out for blood, because it was one thing when Jay Clev was trying to stop the Idolator. It's another thing when he's avenging his dead daughter. You know, this this has hit another level.
Yeah. Okay. So really, so here's out of character, right?
Yep. I think we should zoom this to the out of character stage.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind going to arrest of some sort and kind of like doing a time skip. Like I don't mind that. Especially if, you know, if that happens, then my character is just in limbo for a while.
Yeah. So what I actually have a proposal here because we also want to move Moss's storyline ahead. So I have a proposal to do a time skip essentially for the entire crew, which is Bidruhi will be in prison for some time. In the meantime, Peregrine will like basically do what he can so that the Falling Star can't just like jump you and kill you. Right. So he will not, I think, stop there being a war, but he will push the war back into like a shadow war where they can't just like kill you in the street. So we might use the alternative war mechanics that I invented for this actually, where the enemy is in a position to like sabotage you but not outright attack you. And the other thing that we can do is we can just automatically advance this whole looking for Gerben the camel plotline, which moves ahead Moss and Mushvik's storyline too, and just say that apparently he's hard to find and it took like the time while Bidruhi was in prison to find him. He is a smuggler, so it makes a degree of sense that he doesn't have like a super public address. Just, it's an idea for how we could frame it, right? Then we could sort of get back to it. But I'm open to suggestions. It's also possible that Bidruhi is away and you play a backup character.
I wouldn't recommend that. I don't think that's a good idea for the pod.
Okay.
I'd much rather do a time skip.
Mm-hmm. How do we feel about the possibility of a time skip? If we don't want to go with the arrest idea, I think it's still possible, like if we go back in character to like wiggle out of this somehow. You could try to like pull some kind of a double bluff or something. Maybe even with Peregrine's consent, like maybe you could convince him to do this, to like fake sending Bidruhi to prison. It's possible. But I think the logical and straightforward thing to do is a time skip during which some of the like projects of the other characters just advance automatically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And... I enjoy the time skip.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So I was going to say that, I don't know about the others, but like Bidruhi's thing is like, you know, he killed someone. This is the best way to save his family. Sure, let's go. Let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
He's not one for like elaborate double bluffs and so on.
No.
Yeah.
And it also makes sense, I think, as Peregrine says, for the rest of the crew to like try to lay low and like, you know, not like show up super publicly and so on and like do scores and things.
Mm-hmm.
To lay low until things blow over.
And... we can frame it like that, because I was just wondering like if we do a time skip, then the Falling Star is still coming after us, right?
Yeah, but they'll be coming after you a little bit less. I think that's what the logical thing is. I invented these alternate war mechanics where you can still be at war, but like a more subtle form of war. And I think it makes sense that they would be pushed back to that because they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be sanctioned to just jump you in the street anymore, which they kind of have been at this point. They like when they've tried to kill you so far, it's been entirely openly.
Yeah.
And now they're like, if they try to kill you openly, they get in a world of trouble suddenly.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like a route, not only logical, but also something I know people are excited for.
Yep.
So I think it works both ways.
The one thing is that like Mushfiq has a plan, has a project which is on a timer, and it's finding Eurostad before like he is killed by Gurban the Camel, apparently. At least if you understood the book you read correctly. But I
So I was just gonna say that if I remember correctly, the book said like it was that he was gonna die, and we knew that Gurban was gonna be involved somehow.
It didn't say like it will happen. Yeah. We have a clock for it, but the book didn't say it will happen in like 6 weeks. So I suppose in that sense you do have time. That is correct, actually. Yeah? Cool. I still think it makes sense to tick this clock a little bit just as a consequence of time passing, but not ticking it all the way. So
yeah.
Alright. We're at 1 to level 2. It means couple months. It's not that bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. So you will have to lay low, and it's not unrealistic that like whatever leads you had on Gurban, you lose them and you have to start over and so on.
Okay, so we're doing this then? Everyone good?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I think so. Hope everyone's okay with this, but I think it's time the consequences hit you and we rolled an arrest, so you know, fair's fair.
Yep. I am going to roll for my incarceration.
This makes sense, yeah.
Yep. So it is just a straight up tier roll. I'm going to push myself, if that's allowed.
Don't know if it is allowed, actually, on incarceration rules. Let me check.
I mean, it's where extra effort would make sense here. That's, I think, how it's described as in the book.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
Or a devil's bargain, either way.
Sure. Okay, a devil's bargain is more interesting, so let me think if I can come up with one. Okay. Actually, I have a devil's bargain, and it's just an interesting one. It's not necessarily bad for you. But it could take the story in an interesting direction. Mona, darling, is used to the mines. I think she might come with you. She's the person who has like connections and things there. She's the person who could look after you. But it does mean she is pulled away from the crew and goes back into the mines.
Yeah. Do you mind if we have a quick conversation with her about that? Because we haven't seen... I recruited her and then nothing really happened with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can totally do that. But I think, makes sense as a devil's bargain?
I like that. I'll roll first and then we'll see what the conversation is as we go in together.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Okay.
We can do like a drop-down scene in this as it passes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here goes nothing. Yep. This is like one of the densest rules in the game.
Yeah, it is. Incarceration is harsh. If you fail this roll, it sucks.
It's a 5. So.
But you roll a 5.
Yeah. You keep your head down and do your time without incident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About
good.
About as well as you can hope, I think. So, yeah.
We use our wanted level?
One wanted level and all heat. So.
Nice.
Yay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's it look like as I get arrested and Mona and all that?
Yeah. So what I think Peregrine will do is he will have this like friendly chat with you, and then he will not arrest you now because he's trying to hide you. He like make up an agreement with you, like come to this location where one of my men will drag you away and very publicly call you this fake name and throw you in the mines.
All right.
So that's, you know, the throwing you in the mines bit. And then I think, it's a labor camp. It's like the mines are in these deep and scary ass shafts. So I think you're in one of the ones that slants deeply where you like see very little light. You know, the sun in Udwasha is false, but you don't even see the sun down here. Everything is like lamp light. And you are put with a work gang of the various criminals. I don't even think necessarily it's that, but I think most of the people down here are probably down here because of like escaping debts and stuff. This is usually how it goes in these kinds of labor camps, right?
Yeah.
And also to throw off the smoke further, it wouldn't make any sense to have you be officially arrested for murder. So you're officially arrested, I think, for just tax evasion, and you have to pay off your tax debts, and that's why it's like some months.
Mm-hmm. I have not been reporting to the Ministry of the Interior because I'm a refugee.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's probably why a lot of the other people are in here too.
Mm-hmm.
The Uduashan bureaucracy is very cruel and makes no sense. So this is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's the case that Mona is in here like with you as a prisoner, but she has connections with the Archaeo miners, the like professional mining companies that come down and do surveys and stuff. Mm. And this is how she basically smuggles things into you, right? I think that's more of the role. She like gives you some advice, but this particular conversation you have with her is when she smuggles in for you, of course, some gulab jamun.
Mm.
Like a few weeks into it when you're really miserable and longing for creature comforts. She like comes by with like her Archaeo miner partner. And like the reason this Devil's Bargain is a little bit bad is it puts her back in touch with her old, with this other crew. So her loyalties are more split now.
Mm-hmm.
And she will probably owe them some and whatever.
I share it with all of my new friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so I think how she smuggles this to you, let's have this scene be the conversation,
mm-hmm.
right? Is she takes you aside and she goes like, you there, have you been doing any mining? And actually, it's better if I show you. And she like puts on an authoritative voice, like, you know, we're here doing an expedition, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then she pulls you aside into like a part of the mine where there's no one else, where she's pretending to be inspecting something. Mm-hmm. And she drops the persona. She goes, I'm glad to see you're still well. I got you something.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes out a small packet.
Mona, I really want to give you a big hug, but I won't do that.
Nothing else. They'd probably see all the dust on my clothes. Yeah. Mm. Says looking down over you because you are obviously like very dusty.
I want you to know that it's only the fact that we are deep undercover, and if I give you a hug, it will blow it all, and then I might get thrown into even deeper mines. That is the only thing preventing me from giving you a hug right now. I want you to know this. I want you to know that I love you. What's this? Is it gulab jamun?
Yeah. He is completely taken aback by that comment. And then you smell the gulab jamun, I guess. And she says, yeah, but not so loud. Just.
Mona, if you don't want me to be loud, don't give me gulab jamun.
I. Look, guy. She is like completely thrown off, and she says. Then she smiles. I think he says, "I'm glad to see they haven't broken your spirits down here. You know, your father would have never accepted this deal."
Hmm. Well, good thing I'm not him. How's everyone doing?
Well, how is everyone doing? Let us have her convey what everyone else is doing.
And now we cut to everyone else's downtime.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed.
Meanwhile.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I don't think we'll be doing this as a regular downtime because you're laying low.
Mm-hmm.
If it's okay with people.
It could be downtime in the sense that it happens over months and months.
Yeah, okay. I will give the crew an option, actually. Either we run this as a regular downtime, or we just say time passes, everyone clears all their stress, and that's that. How do we feel about that?
Sure. But like some of the things that I've got, like one of the clocks that I've got, I mean, I could do this quietly, you know,
Okay, then let's let have everyone else have downtime, I suppose. So, what is Mushfik up to? Let's have Mona start her story with Mushfik.
What is Mushfik up to? Okay, so I'm trying to deal with the trauma, and talking with Zahir didn't really help it all that much. I think it makes sense that, like, it doesn't even need to be, like in terms of the clock, I don't think, it doesn't even need to be, like, a specific scene, but the fact that Bidruhi is away kind of maybe, like, makes Mushfik realize that he actually misses the little guy. And, so it's going to be more of an internal thing in his mind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sitting and meditating on this. What do you roll to miss Bidruhi?
But do I go to visit her? It's a connection with a friend, right? So consort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. You're consorting with your memories. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Give me a minute.
Uh-huh. So one of the things that Mushfik is doing is missing Bidrohi. That's very sweet.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. What was it? It's a six.
Hey, three ticks. Yeah. Working through your feelings, it turns out this missing the little guy is really important. Mm-hmm. Okay, I guess there's not much more to be said about this, except Mona frames it to Bidrohi like, I think Mushfik misses you a lot. He hasn't quite been himself. He's spending more and more time in his room. Just thinking deep thoughts.
Mona, you and I know that in this situation, Sherekatam is the real victim.
Please tell him
I think of him all the time.
Mm-hmm. I'll send him your regards.
Tell him that here I am having... Actually, honestly, this is all of this is honest. I'm not lying to you. It's actually pretty fine here. Like, the guys are, like, kind of rough, but, like, they're kind of cool once you get to know them. Do tell them that I have, like, lots of new cool friends, but none of them are Sherekatam. Okay? Yeah. Very important.
Uh-huh. All right.
Yes.
Cool. What is Mushfik's other action?
Well, so I don't have a clock for this, but... But you said that we're just gonna... like, catch up to Gurban at the end of this anyway, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So it would ordinarily be a project, but in this case, I think it just makes... He is such a high priority for both Mushfik and Moss that it makes no sense for the story to go anywhere else, I think.
Yeah. So, and in that case, I think what I should be doing, one of the things I should be doing is preparing for some kind of retribution from the Falling Star, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
So maybe set up some traps around the lair.
So you're working on getting the second dot of secure, or do you even have the first dot of secure? I don't think you do.
I don't.
No, you don't have the upgrade secure, so I think we can call this a clock to work on the upgrade secure.
Yeah.
And let's call this an 8 clock. I think ordinarily it would be a little bit longer with a crew upgrade, but we also established that Moonlit has already done some work attempting to secure the boarding house on. So I think this is just for the lair, so we'll call it an 8.
All right, I'll add it to the crew sheet then, yeah?
Yeah, it makes sense to put it on the crew sheet. The secure upgrade.
On this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think this one can also be pretty quick. You just see Mushfik, I don't know, putting some nails through planks to make punji boards, that kind of thing.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Makes sense.
And what do I roll for this? Well, I'm making a trap, aren't I?
Yep.
Yeah, Tinker.
Yeah. Tinker. I mean, I don't have anything in Tinker, so...
But it's the spirit. It's the spirit that counts. Mm-hmm.
It's the spirit that counts, yeah.
That's what I would tell you if I were there.
Mm. Uh-huh. No, but you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if any of your contacts can help you with this role to take it from zero.
We have a blacksmith.
Oh, yeah.
You have a blacksmith. Okay, let's call in Woots here, actually, to give you bonus dice. I think that's reasonable, actually. He makes the nails.
Yeah. Woots, I've got a commission for you. Put some nails through this plank.
Yep. Absolutely. So he will mumble to himself about how this is beneath him. And
the planks are supposed to be beneath you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I would say so.
Let's not have it have a cost this time. I think it's fair. It's like long downtime. It's not that, you know, for him to help out with this on occasion over the coming weeks, not a big deal.
Yeah.
Do you have one die then?
Yeah. Oh, no.
It's still a one.
It's a one.
Okay. Well, it turns out that neither of you are excellent carpenters, which, since neither of you have worked as carpenters, this makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Mona will also convey this telling of how Mushfik is upgrading the securities. What about Moss?
Does that actually tick the clock at all? It doesn't, right? No.
Yeah, it does. It's still one tick.
It's one tick, yeah.
Even when you roll a one, it's one tick. So you're one out of eight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about Mosapu.
So, Moss will continue to take care of the tree. She's the reason why she's been gone for a while is because it needed a lot of caring. And that's not changed, I think. So the first thing I'm doing is indulging vice. Is anyone indulging vice with me for functioning vice?
It doesn't really make sense for like Clem to do so, I don't think. It's very complicated in this case.
Yeah.
Is, I guess Mushfik could be, in theory, just because he could like bring you food. If you want to spend like a coin or a rep to indulge vice. Yet, I don't know. You have some stress. You don't have a lot, but with functioning vice, it's kind of safe to clear it. Also, technically, if you don't indulge vice during downtime, you do take some stress. So by the rules, you actually should.
Sorry, say that again?
You have some stress. You could indulge vice by just like bringing Moss some food. I think that's the logical way to tie them together. And I realize that when you have trauma, if you don't indulge vice, you do take stress technically by the rules. So,
I see.
Yeah, you could spend a rep or a coin to do so.
Well, it's fine. We'll spend a coin. It's food, right?
Yeah.
But we'll always spend coin on food.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. All right, so then you're both indulging vice.
Well, this might be overindulging, but we shall see.
Yeah.
Oh, no, well, it's almost perfect.
Yeah, because Moss has functioning vice, you can adjust the result up or down by 2, so you can make it a 3 and clear all your stress.
Perfect. Could not have gone any better.
And Moss rolled 1 and 1, so I guess you cleared 3 stress.
And I think what we're seeing is that one of the times where Mushfik is bringing in food, she's like, ah, shit. Mushfik, come and take a look at this.
Yeah.
And she points at like the corner where this tree is. Like, this tree has to be pruned perpetually because it's perpetually kind of pressing itself into the cement and crumbling itself, and now or splintering itself, growing into it. And she points at a part that has this kind of whitish growth on it. I think it's an infection. I think that's why it's getting weaker. It really doesn't belong in this place.
It really does not, no. Some kind of... I've never seen some kind of any like a fungus like this before. It's very...
I'll try to scrape it off, see if that does anything. I hope the mycelium hasn't gotten too deep yet.
I mean, I spent a lot of time on these trees, but no, I'm no botanist.
Do you know much about Corban the Camel?
Well, nothing at all, in fact. Just had a run-in with Omid, and he mentioned that Corban brought my Usad to such higher into the city some time ago. And then I read... You remember the book that Saida had us steal, and then we left with the blue smoke troop. I had a glance at that, and it just said something about how Gurban the Camel was going to be responsible for Usa Shire's death as well, and it doesn't make any sense to me at all, so
that's,
I mean, it's all we can do.
That's a dire prediction.
Yeah.
He's brought someone else into the city. You know how we there's one ghost in here in the tree. The person who was buried here might still have family in the city from the Roka village. One of them is here, but Corban brought them in. I think maybe we should make contact with them and with whoever is still back there in Githris. Because as I said, this tree doesn't belong here.
No.
It's gonna...
Well, if Gurban can bring people from Githris here, he can take things from here back.
True.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find out anything about him. If you hear anything, let me know. Thanks for the food, by the way.
Oh yeah. Sundari Tandoori's best.
Oh, good.
Yep. All right. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I guess Mona will say that Moss has been spending time pruning the tree and worrying about it. And probably Moonlit has been there a couple of times, too.
Hmm. Think Bidrahi, as always, has this, like, shifty, uncomfortable look in his face whenever they talk about the tree. Because, like, he doesn't connect to that at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he just says, it's nice that that Ma and sister are spending time together. And I hope Uzra is also getting to know all about this tree.
I don't know how much they're telling her, actually.
Mm.
But maybe when she's older.
Yeah, I think Bidruhi doesn't say anything because I think mentally he's like, well, I got pretty old and then suddenly it was all thrown at me. So hopefully she has a smoother run towards it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And what is Moss's second action?
To look for Korban the camel.
Yep. Makes sense.
I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to roll like anything for that. Yeah.
Oh,
Well, it sounds like a clock, but you're already working on the project to find out the identity of the tree, and I think it's tied to that. And you only have one tick left on that project, so I think you can just... True. That's why I said you don't have to roll. Like, you have one tick left to figure out the identity of the ghost, and it just makes sense that following up on this lead is that one tick. So it's like, you know, you can spend a downtime action and you just do it.
All right. Sounds good.
Yep. So that finishes that project. Find out the ghost's, or find the ghost's family. Which, there will be a scene involved, obviously, but yeah. Wraps it up. And lastly, Mona says, like, and, well, there's the new person, Clem, who is spending an awful lot of time with Woots.
Mm. But
what they do, I don't fully understand. They make swords and give them away? this is kind of what Clem has been doing, right? Giving out swords for free.
Wow, sibling Clem is like a badass philanthropist. Wow, okay. Really cool.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, I still haven't figured that person out, but they seem really cool. That's all I can say.
Well, I'm not sure either. Mona says, and let's see what Clem is actually doing.
Oh yeah, 100%. You got me. Uh-huh. I'm going to be indulging my vice in the blacksmiths with Woots, forging my ancestral steel.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah.
Let's see what that looks like. I overindulge.
You overindulge.
That's fine.
Overindulge when making swords.
Guys, I made too many swords.
There's so many of them.
Yeah, so how I'm going to frame this, I think what makes sense here is it you who pick? I think it is, actually. You pick a consequence, usually.
Mm, yeah.
But I have a proposal, and my proposal is cut off, and this is not because, like, Woots kicks you out and is like, never come back here, but I think it's just because he's not running out of profit, and so...
you're not allowed to give away swords anymore.
Yeah, pretty much.
I can't believe
it. Because it costs him in material and stuff. So I think you are cut off in the sense that you will like need to get him some coin or work on a project for him or something for business to be good. But, you know... And I, you know, he is kind of enthusiastic about this. He has also been interested in learning these craft. It's just... spending this much time practicing and so little time selling, it's also just like, you don't sell a lot of swords. Probably his day-to-day job is to sell, you know, tools and things people actually use. And he's been just spending too little time on that. So my suggestion is that you are cut off, not because Woots kicks you out, but because his business is doing so poorly, he can't afford, like, to buy any more metal for frivolous projects. So, is it fair?
Yeah, I think to frame it a little bit differently, because I think it's very specific steel that Clem goes out and gets. I think it's I think it's like there's two. She's using up all of his space, his available space, right? Too. Yeah, I think it makes sense. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have space to do that.
Mm-hmm. So I think what you will need to do is secure him some sort of like reliable source of income to compensate for his lack of money.
Cool. Yeah.
So yeah, again, I get the feeling that Woots actually kind of likes you, so it's less "Grr, get out of here," and more like, "I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to stop doing this because my business is in the red now." Yep.
Money's fake.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Money's fake. Why do you need money? This is important. Uh-huh. No, yep. That's fair.
Uh-huh. All right. So yeah, Mona's already told this part, so we can move on to downtime action number two. I guess you will say, mention this whole thing that like Woots' business has been suffering as a result. Like, they're very interested in making swords. They made a lot of swords. They've given some of them away. They can't seem to sell any of the ones they haven't given away because
isn't
actually like a high demand for swords.
Okay. Please go into my bedroom and there's a stack of books, right? And in that stack of books, you will find a book called Dynamic Commercial Enterprise Advice. Okay, please pick that book out and give it to Sister Clem.
I'll try to remember the name.
Dynamic Commercial Enterprise Advice. Please write this down.
Yeah. You will take notes of it. There we are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. What is Clem's other downtime action?
We might be heading out into the desert soon. So I think she's going to be, after being kicked out of the blacksmiths, I can't do what I was going to do, but that's fine. I think I'm going to go to the market instead, and I'm going to be haggling for gear to go out into the Deathlands and the desert to continue on my Deathlands pet clock. Because it sounds like we're going that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be prepared.
Yeah, so haggling sounds like rolling with lifestyle, or?
I mean, I'd prefer command? Intimidating people into giving me what I want, just because I have zero in lifestyle. So that'd be nice.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You can go with command. Okay. Mm. So I think, okay.
Foreign quarter.
Sure. Command in the foreign quarter makes perfect sense. And I think I will offer you a devil's bargain on this. I don't normally do this on downtime actions, but I think shaking people down for stuff
the
foreign quarter. Yeah, particularly because your rival is a rich hedonist trader in the foreign quarter. So I think you can take a devil's bargain of putting a 4 o'clock and ticking it on your sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Which is called banned from the markets, and Tamir will be working on this, so he won't only take as a consequence.
Cool, just more reason to deal with her, which is perfect. Let's go ahead.
You can have this devil's bargain of potentially, basically, just being blacklisted from the foreign quarter traders.
No. She can't go anywhere. Clem's not allowed anywhere anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not allowed in Woots. It's not that. This is fine. Yeah. No, it's cool. Yeah.
Okay. Mark that tick. Mark that clock on your sheet. Tick it once, and then roll with the bonus dice.
Yeah, got it. And that's a 5.
Mm-hmm. So 2 ticks towards your Deathlands project. So Mona will tell her story of.
Would she know this bit? Probably she wouldn't.
Probably she wouldn't, actually, yeah. So she tells the story about Woots. And then I guess we'll see in the prison, I think we'll see Mona say, "And finally, there's Saida." And I think this is actually like a suitable cliffhanger to end the session on, because we do need to know what Saida is doing, but we won't because Tree isn't here.
Mm.
So I think it's a reasonable place to actually wrap the session before Bidrohi gets out of prison, largely because also Saida would be there when he gets out of prison.
Yeah, maybe she's about to tell me about Saida, but I get interrupted. Sorry, someone's like, prisoner. Yeah. Sir. And I say, okay. I'm sure she's doing well. Tell everyone that I love them and that I miss them very much. And I will share these gulab jamuns with my new friends, Bath Time, Night Terror, Ripon the Ripper, and Zoot Zoot Mohitul.
Yeah, she hears you bust over this very quickly. And then she like stops you and she puts a hand on your shoulder. She will wipe the dust off later. And she says, Bidrohi, you did the right thing. I'd say your father would be proud, but he wouldn't. And that's exactly why I'm proud. Okay?
Mm-hmm. I squeeze the hand. And Bidrohi doesn't say anything because Bidrohi knows he did the right thing. But it comforts him to know that others think that as well.
Yeah. And there she goes. You'd better get back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Time to go hang out with Zoot Zoot Mohitul.
Yes.
The reason I extended the scene is because I wrote these names down on Notepad and I'm like, I have to see them.
Yes, you do. you hang out with some cool guys, evidently. All right.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. That's it then.
So we're wrapping with Bidrohi still in prison and with Moss having tracked down this community of people. And we'll do XP and then we can discuss a little bit potential ideas for where to take this. And if you want to listen in on those potential discussions, you can join our Patreon. And to you who are already on our Patreon, let's do XP. And to you who aren't, goodbye for now.
Here close the doors to the House of Endings. Those who dwell within are Soheb, called Claude, Adiat, called Soap, Saumitri, called Tree, Salty, and Emma. I have been Prince, your host. Our city of Uduasha is based on Blades in the Dark by John Harper and Evil Hat Productions, with special thanks to Johnstone Metzger. Follow us on Twitter or support us on ko-fi.com/desperateattune. If you want to engage further with us, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/desperateattune, where you will get our newsletter, extra content, and updates from Uduasha.